This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA with Parmelis & Associates. After 2 weeks of discussing return on investment and the topic of private equity and how they approach this topic was sprinkled in a couple times. I've been doing this accounting for auto repair shops for almost 20 years and probably have about 100 plus locations that have been sold to private equity over that time, all of those which have happened in the last 4 years and are currently still happening right now. Who are these groups? How do they approach the same businesses? And what can we learn from them is what we're going to talk about this week. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want to hear your question answered on here or just have a question for me, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to me about accounting and tax services that Parmelis can provide for your shop? Shoot me a text at 301-307-5413. And last but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors, Promotive. If you need to recruit the next person for your shop, give Promotive a call. Great news. You now have a hiring partner to help you with the heavy lifting of hiring your next superstar. Introducing Promotive, a full-service staffing solution for your auto repair shop. Visit them online at gopromotive.com. First and foremost, I want to be explicitly clear about this episode. I am going to try to not even really talk about specific valuations on here and how they approach it in a practical sense, because this episode is not how to sell to a private equity group. This episode is not you should sell to a private equity group. This is just kind of giving everyone an update on who these groups are, what they're looking to do, and what this probably means, or my opinion on what it means for the overall industry. What I will tell you about selling to a private equity group is you should not do it alone. You shouldn't sell to anyone alone, but specifically private equity. If you've ever seen Shark Tank, these are sharks. These guys have one thing in mind and one thing in mind alone, and it's making money. Sure, if you want to go and you want to just take a shot at it, fine. I would not recommend it. I don't think anyone would recommend it. And I don't think that you should do it after listening to a podcast, reading an article, or anything. This is a major decision. And these are majorly sophisticated groups on this that have done this time and time again. It's probably the first time you've ever done it. So be careful. That being said, let's talk about who these groups are. What is private equity? A lot of times, and this kind of surprised me the other day when I was talking to a shop owner that was approached by one of these groups because he was not really even familiar with this specific group or the entire idea of private equity to a large extent. What is private equity? Private equity is just that, a privately held group of people that have equity, in generally this case, a business. You could have private equity that own real estate. You could have private equity that own a ton of different things. But in this situation, we're talking about private equity. It's institutional investors buying small businesses and specifically auto repair shops in our case. Have we seen this before? Yes, private equity groups are very common in just about every industry that you see. Private equity groups buy up accounting firms. Private equity groups buy up hospital groups. Private equity groups buy up dealerships. Private equity groups buy up collision shops. And now what we're seeing is automotive repair and specifically independent automotive repair shops. Like I said, we have seen this before. Even if you go out, you know, outside of the automotive industry, this is happening and has happened already in most of the other trades. If you look at HVAC groups, if you look at plumbing groups, there are major regional and national names out there, and most of those have been kind of started or made to be what they are now through acquisitions, consolidation. Even if we look into our industry, if we look at the automotive industry as kind of a wider spectrum outside of independent repair shops, the collision world and the dealership world has already been through this, has already seen this. If you look on the dealership side of it, how many of you guys first started your shops and you had independently owned, you know, OEM dealerships? Flash forward today, how many of those are owned by the Mile One Group, Fitzgerald, or whatever handful of dealership groups there are around the country? Collision is probably the one that most closely resembles what we are seeing now in the automotive space or the aftermarket repair side of things, and that had probably a 10 to 15 year head start. To understand what the private equity groups see in independent auto repair shops, I think it would be important to kind of understand what they saw and how they are able to do a similar thing in the collision world. But there's also some key differences here. One of the probably largest buyers in the collision side of things in recent memory is going to be Caliber Collision. Caliber Collision, especially in a local market here, had been going up probably for the last 10 years, buying up the largest collision shops, the best collision shops on it, and built a pretty incredible network of shops. Why are these collision shops? What was the idea behind the consolidation on the collision shop side, and why has that been so successful for these groups? In the collision world, any of you that own a body shop or deal with insurance companies are aware that you do not set your prices. Largely, it is set by the insurance company. If I have one collision shop in Maryland and I go to Allstate and I say, I'm not going to do your work unless you pay me $60 an hour, you know, body rate. Might make you kind of sad to know this, but yeah, body shops, collision shops don't get the kind of labor rates that you do. A little bit different how they do this, but just stay with me here. So if I have one collision shop in Maryland and I go back to Allstate and say, $60, take it or leave it, and they're currently paying me $50, Allstate is going to come back and say, Hunt, we appreciate your business over the year. If you don't want $50, then you're going to get nothing. We do not negotiate with you, and we're not going to do anything. Flash forward to 3 years later. My collision shop has been bought up by Caliber, one of whatever, 100 different locations that they have all across Maryland. And Caliber goes back to Allstate and has the same conversation. But instead of saying, if you don't give us $60 an hour on our body rate, we're not going to do it in one location. We're not going to do any of your work for any of your customers in any of our locations across the state. Can you imagine if you just look at if these acquisitions happened overnight, if someone like Caliber is able to look at all of these businesses that they just bought and say, just because of our power, just because of the group that we have amassed on this, we instantly overnight can get 10, 15, 20, 30% higher labor rates on all the work that we're already doing. You can see how they can come in there, overpay for this stuff, and on the back end, still be happy and laughing all the way to the bank. This is more or less exactly what has led a lot of these guys to look at the automotive repair space, but I think that they're missing a major point here. The thing about a collision shop is when you go to a collision shop, the customer is generally not paying them. Your insurance company is. And so if you're getting a car that's back, that's repaired, and it was free, you have a lot less stipulations on it than when you're paying out of your own pocket. Also, it is not accurate and it's probably not true at all, but if collision work and specifically paint work is done correctly, a good job and a bad job from 10 feet away are going to look exactly the same. Some of this is perception as reality, and some of this is the customer just doesn't care if they're not paying for this. When you go over to the automotive side of it and specifically the repair side of it, it could be, and it generally is, much, much different. You have to fight for everything that you're selling because it's an A to B conversation. It's an A to B sale. The customer is giving it to you and you're giving the product back to the customer. Also on this, maybe for the collision side, they have a benefit of having that brand recognition, the larger group. Hey, there's power here. These guys have a lot of different technology and a lot of different equipment to be able to fix my car correctly. For the automotive repair side of it, we don't see that same perception with customers. They do not want to see a chain of 100. The reason that you guys probably have a successful business is because they've dealt with some of those chains before, did not have a good experience, and are looking for that more boutique service, that more personal touch that some of these larger groups just don't do and are not interested as well. If we're looking at this, you might say, well, they might be missing the point altogether, but I think that that would be very ignorant to talk about. These guys care about one thing and one thing alone, making money. What comes second? I do not think that there is anything that comes second. In my own firsthand experience of these, have these guys been profitable when they take over these shops? Yes. Do they operate it differently than what you're trying to do? Absolutely. But they also have another aspect of this that you guys don't have in mind, and that's an exit plan. When these groups come in, they have really two objectives. They need to make money. They need to increase your business, but they are also not going to be holding on this for very long. Most private equity groups, especially in the earlier stages like this, are looking to hold their investment for 5 years or less. So if they amass 60 shops on it, they are looking for an exit. Some of these guys are looking to probably buy and hold. If you're looking at this from an investment nature on this, Auto repair shops should give about a 33% return on your investment. If you package that up, you could sell that investment to someone else and still be able to pay out healthy returns while keeping a large amount of that for yourself. But what most of these guys are doing is looking to make a much larger exit. If you come in and you pay on a 6x valuation, and when you get 80 plus locations, that 6x multiple now becomes 12x. These guys can make their money back, can make profit along the way, and then also, hopefully, double their money when they exit in 5 years. If you do the math on this, this is completely different numbers than what we're looking at. And this is what someone else said to me. They're not using the same numbers. They're not using the same formulas because, like I said, they are not planning to own these businesses. These are built to sell, they are buying them to sell, and they're buying them to be profitable. What are these groups looking to do? All of these groups are looking for different things. If you're going to look at the larger ones that I've dealt with, there's probably 5 to 8 of these around the country. There's some of these groups that are in the Midwest. There's some of these groups that are in the Southeast. There's some of these groups in the Northeast. And a lot of these have started to kind of cross borders. A lot of these guys have started to join forces together. But this, at this stage, probably the largest private equity group that we've dealt with is up to about 80 to 100 locations. So like I just mentioned, that is one of their largest factors here. If you have one business that makes $100,000, is that the same value or the same proportion of value as 80 businesses all already combined making $100,000 each? A business in the $1 to $10 million range is going to be looked at a lot differently as a business in the $80 to $100 million. How do I explain that? How do I translate into that into your logic? This is looking at percentage versus dollars. If you look at selling tires from a percentage standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. Well, I should sell parts. It's much higher. You can turn this stuff quickly. You can turn it easily on it. And at the end of the day, 15%, if done quickly, could end up being much higher profit per hour than even what looks like on paper, much more profitable work. That's exactly what these guys are doing. Strength in numbers. And hey, if I have $100 million, I don't really care that I'm not making a 20% net. 15% is still pretty darn good. And for a lot of these, the money people in these situations on it, they are not actually working. They're not in these shops for these kind of returns. So yeah, it looks really, really good.
Shop owners, are you struggling to find and retain top-tier talent for your automotive shop? Introducing Promotive, on the web at gopromotive.com. With over 40 years of combined industry and recruiting experience, we're the ultimate staffing solution. We go beyond traditional agencies. Our team provides dedicated recruiters and account managers advising on processes, compensation, and benefits. We focus on placing technicians and service advisors with shops that offer the best culture, training, and long-term growth opportunities. Trust our experience to match the right talent to your shop. We carefully select shops that value employee excellence and provide an environment for success. Our dedicated team leads the entire process, leveraging our industry knowledge and expertise. Partner with Promotive and experience their advantage to help you build a high-performing team that drives your shop's growth. Visit gopromotive.com today and let us help find and keep the best talent in the industry.
Another thing on here is instantly overnight, some of these groups can have synergistic cost savings that completely shift the dynamics, even if they make no changes to your business. If you look at some of these groups, they actually do not even look at your financials and sometimes require full financials outside of sales and customer figures. Why? Because what you pay for parts is not what they pay for parts. Again, just like we were talking about the buying power with insurance companies, do you think that if you're buying one water pump, you would get the same price if you're buying 1,000? Absolutely not. More specifically, though, on the tire side of things, there has been a couple of these groups that have educated me. Hunt, we're going in and we're buying your client's shop that's doing $4 million a year. They're selling virtually no tires. We know from our track record that if we start selling tires, we can instantly sell probably about 30% more just by adding tires to the current service offerings that we have. Again, if you're looking at that of, well, hey, that is probably $1 million in tire sales on that. It's not the most profitable work. I can't see the benefit there. Anyone that does tires know that on the front end, you make money and on the back end that you make money. In some of these situations, they are able to pay for their investment just on quarterly and year-end volume rebates from the tire manufacturers. The numbers that they're looking at are probably different than the numbers that you're looking at for your business. Lastly, on the synergistic cost-saving side of it, your overhead is not theirs. you have a full-time bookkeeper. They have 60 locations. They have a handful of bookkeepers, but it's spread throughout. Your advertising is for one location. Their advertising is for 60. Your administrative costs, payroll costs, HR costs are for one location, three locations. Theirs are for 50, 70 locations. Again, strength in numbers, relative cost. There's some cost that you have, no matter if you have one shop or 60. And so you can see how this starts to become more and more profitable a lot of times as it gets larger and larger. Sound a little bit scary? Sound a little bit different? And does it make you a little bit concerned about the future? Well, maybe this next part isn't going to make you feel better, but I think overall, we are not in a bad position. I think that there are pieces that we can learn from what they've changed in your shops and what they've been able to accomplish by taking over a lot of my clients and seeing this stuff firsthand. First and foremost, like I said, they look at this differently and they care about one thing and one thing alone, and that is making money. They do not do unprofitable work. One of the first things that I notice is if they take over a shop that does everything, that is known to be the shop in town that fixes everything, pretty quickly they are not. There is a lot more money in putting pads and light suspension work than there is in doing heavy diagnostic and fixing that problem that no other shop in town can do. These guys don't do unprofitable work, and I would probably ask myself, if I'm a shop owner, why am I doing it if they're going to stop doing it immediately? They find their lane and they scale it as fast as they possibly can. If you're good at pads and slapping on tires and you figure it out and you figure out you're profitable doing that, once you figure out what you're doing, you start throwing money at it as fast as you can. If we figured out how to make money on this, like we talked about last week, how much can I put into advertising? How much return can that have back? They're never afraid of scale. They're never afraid of expanding because that's absolutely 100% what they're built to do. They're built to make money, they're built to grow, and they're built to sell. Lastly on this, they are able to do all this and they're able to operate on objective based on numbers, objectives based on their end goals because they have massive amounts of capital. They don't have to slow down their advertising because their funds get tight. They don't have to try and finance this piece of equipment on their expansion because they just can't get access to capital. These guys have cash, these guys have access to lines of credit, and they have more money than we could probably ever dream of. What does that mean for your business? Do you need limitless amounts of capital? No, but you need enough capital in your business to be able to do what your business needs, not do what you can afford. Does this mean that you shouldn't be doing any work that isn't profitable? No, but you should be thinking about your service offerings and going much more heavily into stuff that makes you money, not the stuff that you think makes you money. And again, is this all about money? If it's all about money for you, then it should be. But again, keep in the back of your mind, if you built this business to take care of yourself, to take care of your customers, and take care of your community, then does that mean you need to change what you're doing? Then probably not. If you built this business to make the most amount of money possibly can, then yeah, I would probably mimic what these guys are doing as close as I possibly can as well. Hunt, these megacorps are coming into our industry. They're buying up all the shops that are for sale. They are extremely profitable and have massive amounts of cash. How are we going to survive? How does this look for an independent auto repair facility to try to compete in a market against these? So this is where I think it goes from doom and gloom to actually a pretty positive outlook. Private equity is not a good thing for your customers, and it's probably not a good thing for your employees either in the short term. But for a lot of my clients, it has given them a retirement in the last couple of years that they have never dreamed of. Some of my clients had existing offers on the table from either key employees or other shops that private equity was able to come in and sometimes double or triple that offer. A lot of my clients had never dreamed about having a debt-free retirement at age 60 are doing that right now. So we can't look at this as all negative. There are a lot of really good shops that have run for a really, really long time that have been able to sell for a lot of money. Anyone that sees that as a downside on it is probably not the one that received $3 to $4 million from these people. They are also going out and buying your top competitors. They are buying the best shop operators. They do not go into town and find the cheap one. They find the best, the most profitable, the most expensive in a lot of cases. If I'm another shop in town and my best shop operator competitor just got bought out, am I sad? No, I'm probably as happy as I ever been. Because just like we talked about above, these guys aren't very good at hanging on to their employees. My first client that sold to a private equity group, he had 50 employees. 1 year later, he had two of those remaining. 48 employees had left and went somewhere else. Most of your team is working in your shop because they want to work for you, not the name on the front. And just the site or just the talk of private equity group a lot of times will lose half of your employee base. What does that mean for the private equity people? They find people, they replace them, and they get back to work the next day. Also, for the first time in a long time, we're seeing A-level technicians, 20, 30 years experience in shops that are hitting the open market. People are moving, customers are moving, and for the people remaining in this industry, I think that you guys have a major advantage. You go from competing against some of the people that you respect the most and maybe that you learn from to, I would say, people like me operating shops on the other side of the country. Who do you think is going to do a better job, and who do you think is going to be harder for you to compete against? What is next? Is private equity always going to be here? And are we going to see more or less of this in the future? I think for the near future, private equity is here. But one of the biggest things that we have not seen is we have not seen one of these groups make an exit. Like I mentioned before, most of these guys want to stay in at 5 years or less. And most of these guys want to get out and double, triple their money and move on to the next thing. I've been doing this for about 20 years. And like I said, we've been seeing private equity for about 4 to 5 years. So the time is ticking. What I imagine will happen is if one of these groups makes a really, really good exit, we could actually see a gold rush or an influx of people come in here and try to replicate the same thing. Whereas if that first group doesn't make an exit or doesn't make the kind of money that they think, we could actually see an overall collapse. Do I think that either of those is probably a realistic scenario? Definitely probably the first one much before the second one, because I don't think that we see any of these groups make a bad exit anytime soon. If they don't see an opportunity to sell it for a really good price right now, they're probably going to hang on to it for a couple of years. That's my opinion. Is it what's going to be reality? Maybe not. And when it does come out, I'll make sure to update you guys and admit if I got it right or if I completely missed the point. All in all, private equity is here to stay for the near future. It's exciting to see that institutional money is interested in this industry, because do you think that these groups being interested in the same space if they didn't see a bright future for it? At the same time, these groups are changing a market that has been largely unchanged for a long time. I'm not sure about you, but I would be pretty excited to see my biggest competitor get a Firestone logo slapped on his building in a year or two. However, if you ignore what these guys are doing, you could be run over pretty quickly as well. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Just want to say thanks again for listening on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all shows on the aftermarketradionetwork.com and on your favorite podcast listening apps. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.